Welcome to WISA Weekend, our weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. You know, all around the state, public radio stations like this one are covering stories that are impacting their local communities, and many of those stories reflect what's happening across the state and the nation. Today, we bring you a few of those stories, and up first, as the state's budget shortfall approaches $1 billion, a tax cut adopted 4 years ago is getting attention. State House correspondent Karen Kassler explains the small business tax cut promoted by Republican leaders has saved business owners money, but it has gained a lot of criticism in the process.
The small business tax cut is targeted at partnerships, sole proprietorships, LLCs, and S corporations because they report revenue as personal income. It was a 50% tax cut when it was first passed in 2013. But by 2015, it was phased into a 100% deduction of the first $250,000 in income. Governor John Kasich praised the idea just before signing the budget 2 years ago.
The actions that we're taking on small business, we think that's absolutely critical. And at the same time, we have a structural balance in our budget.
Lawmakers touted the tax cut as a way to create jobs, though the Ohio Department of Taxation reported that almost no small businesses would bring in enough savings from that tax cut to hire a full-time worker at minimum wage. Fast forward to the current fiscal year. Tax revenues are now down $841 million below estimates, having been short for 10 of the last 11 months. And that shortfall has been led by the personal income tax. Budget Director Tim Keene says the state will end this fiscal year on June 30th in the black because of underspending, primarily in Medicaid. As for what's causing the shortfall, Keene says tax refunds have been more than expected. But the tax cuts, including the small business tax cut, have all been budgeted for and are not to blame for the deficit.
The tax gains of Ohioans has never exceeded, in the 3 years that we've done this, the estimates that we put in place. So I have seen no evidence to indicate to me that the small business tax cut is the cause of the revenue shortfall that we're seeing.
Keene's budget sent out a document from the Ohio Department of Taxation showing that while the tax cut will have cost the state nearly $1.1 billion in 2016, it was estimated to cost $1.17 billion. The liberal-leaning group Policy Matters Ohio has been concerned about income tax cuts for some time. Research Director Zach Schiller says the small business tax cut may not be the reason for the revenue shortfall, but lawmakers should consider scrapping it anyway.
This tax break, which did not exist only 4 years ago, is costing us $1 billion a year without any visible result from the standpoint of increased jobs or increased hiring by new businesses in Ohio.
And Schiller says federal data shows the number of employees added in Ohio in the most recent full fiscal year, which ended last June, was lower than the number just before the small business income tax cut was enacted. Even Greg Lawson with the conservative Buckeye Institute has reservations about this tax cut.
We do like getting rid of the income tax, but it has to be sustainable. And we would probably prefer to see across the board cuts rather than these specific large scale ones. We love the direction, but there have definitely been significant hiccups in terms of how it's been structured.
A similar but larger small business tax break passed in Kansas in 2012. That state has been wrestling with forecasts of a $900 million deficit. And lawmakers there repealed the tax cut and overrode Republican Governor Sam Brownback's veto earlier this month. Concerned that Ohio might face a similar crisis, Democrats have called for the small business tax cut to be suspended. Senator Michael Skindal of Lakewood says it's creating tax breaks for people who have no intention of hiring new workers at the expense of the state.
Last tax season and this past tax season, the accountants are advising their clients to reorganize themselves in a way so that they can avoid paying any state income taxes whatsoever.
What is interesting is that this fiscal year has brought the state's two best months ever for new business filings with the Secretary of State's office. May set an all-time record of more than 12,800 new business filings, a jump of 18% over the previous year. The Secretary of State's office notes that it has cut the cost to file and that doing so does not guarantee a company will begin operations, be profitable, or create jobs. Karen Kassler, The Ohio Public Radio, State House News Bureau.
Farmers all around Ohio are turning to lawmakers to help fix what they see as a major crisis. Taxes on their land have been soaring, but as State House correspondent Andy Chow reports, making a change to the tax formula could do some damage to a different industry.
This is just under 10 acres on this section, and so it goes all the way back to that tree line that's behind the grain bin.
Brushing through his vast wheat field in Union County, Ron Grayson Burns explains how farming consists of making important business decisions every day.
And if you buy something now, is it going to be good short-term, or is that going to be a long-term investment?
Burns, who's been farming his whole life, points to his tractor and planter sitting on the gravel lot that leads up to the barn. The equipment is bigger than what Burns needs for the land he's currently farming, but he hopes to expand his business.
So having a larger planter instead of that 6-row, I know that this will fit my operation for the next 5-6 years.
But Burns and farmers all around Ohio are running into a major dilemma. Valuations on farmlands are increasing, which means they're seeing their property taxes skyrocket by as much as 300%. As Burns puts it, the hike in taxes puts a lot of stress on the already challenging balancing act of running a farm.
You still want to have a quality product. You still want to be good stewards of the land. So you still want to maintain those aspects of your farm. But then where do you have to cut?
This all goes back to what's known as the current ag use valuation, or CAUV. This formula calculates the tax value of farmland. The CAUV is a big, complicated formula with several variables. Agriculture advocates believe the cause of the jump is tied to what's known as the equity capitalization rate, which is based off of the federal interest rate. Since the federal interest rate has been held low, the valuation has gone up. Leah Curtis with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation says there are proposed changes in the State House and Senate which would take that factor out of the equation.
To make sure that they are more closely tied to the farm economy. So that's things like making sure that equity rate is tied to actual farm equity rather than just the federal interest rate.
This is a fight that's been brewing for a while at the State House. That's because while the proposed change might bring down farmers' taxes, it could also result in a big funding cut for schools. Damon Asbury is with the Ohio School Boards Association. He says the proposals in the House and Senate could cut funds by as much as $20 million a year, collectively, from school districts around the state.
What we do have concerns about is what would appear to be a relatively rapid change without fully understanding the implications for both schools and local government and other taxpayers. Because the way the Ohio tax structure is assigned, when one taxpayer pays less, others will pay more.
According to Asbury, the jump in rates already seems to be leveling out on its own, and rates might not be too high in the next valuation. However, his group does believe an independent panel should look into a solution.
We're not believing that the industry itself should be recommending the solution because it affects everyone, taxpayers, local government. We think that an independent commission that looks at the factors and comes up with a fair recommendation that would treat all fairly would be the right step.
Back in Union County, Burns' farm is just 5 miles away from where he graduated from Fairbanks High School. He says he understands the importance of investing in education and community. Burns adds that changing the CAUV formula is also a balancing act, just like running a farm, to make sure everyone's paying their fair share.
We don't want it for a selfish reason. We don't want it cheaper. We want it to be accurate, and that's what the goal is.
Andy Chow at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
And just an update on that story, the Ohio Senate passed its version of the state operating budget on June 21st. It did include reforms to the CAUV formula. The House and Senate will now work out their differences in a conference committee with a final vote scheduled for June 28th. Members of Ohio's African immigrant community have been waiting for almost a decade for a commission that advocates for its interests. The new African Immigrants Commission was supposed to be seated in 2009, but the community is still waiting. WOSU's Adora Namigade reports several factors have led to the 8-year delay.
As Ohio's African community grows, there's no representation at a state level. There are about 110,000 sub-Saharan African immigrants in the state. That's 35,000 more people than there were in 2005, according to the census. And that's why Celeste Yasfau was involved in the original effort to get Ohio a new African Immigrants Commission almost 10 years ago.
There are so many issues in areas of employment, in areas of health, in areas of affordable house, in areas of social services, case management.
State lawmakers created the 11-member board in 2008, and it was supposed to take effect the following year. But it's 2017, and the board remains empty and inactive. No one can seem to answer exactly why. State Senator Charlita B. Tavares says she worked with Africans over the years to get a list of names.
We brought in people from throughout the state to Columbus for two meetings. We met in Dayton twice, and we had multiple meetings with refugee immigrant representatives from throughout the state.
But there was a lot of disagreement on how to proceed. According to G.B. Saul, a Senegalese man who attended some of those meetings, Somalis wanted about half of the 11 seats because they have the largest population of Africans. But other Africans felt that that would be unfair.
Us as adults, as being in Africa and now our second home, usually we bring our divisions back home, you know, the political differences, the ethnic differences, and we brought here and then we are fighting here.
The delay has caused some groups to start looking at alternatives. Jibril Mohammed directs the group Somali Can, which plans to start a civil leadership training next month for Somalis.
Providing them advocacy skills, connecting them with leadership, I mean political parties and elected officials and city council, state house.
Mohammed says it's not ideal, but it beats waiting around.
If the new African Immigrants Commission had existed, it would have been the proper channel to provide this kind of civic engagement, and it would have provided a channel through which we could, give our opinions and our concerns to elected officials from the governor through the mayor and anybody in between.
A common goal is to involve more young Africans at the forefront of government.
That will be symbolized in the image for our young generation to be part of the city council, to part of the county commissioners' commission, or at state level, the state or senators.
Other ethnic groups have been more successful establishing commissions to advise state government and link constituents to services. They include Latinos and Asian American Pacific Islanders. Every year, the Ohio Latino Affairs Commission sends reports to the state legislature about issues affecting the community. Andrea Magaña-Lewis is the public policy officer for the commission.
We've done reports on cultural competence and making the case for culturally responsive institutions. We've done reports on Ohio Hispanic business owners, talking about their rates.
They hold yearly events and education and health outreach efforts for Ohio's 400,000 Latinos. As for the Africans, State Senator Tavares says it's uncertain when it will be filled.
We followed up again and haven't heard back to find out when those names are going to be submitted. Based on various pieces of information I've been able to gather, they're waiting on the House of Representatives.
As for when the commission will be seated, spokeswoman Emily Kalmbach from Governor Kasich's office said in an email, quote, "We're actually close to wrapping up appointments on our end and should have some soon," end quote. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Adora Namigadde.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Paying for school is a challenge for most every college student, but for students in the U.S. from Libya, many have the money, they just can't access it. Libya has become increasingly unstable, and it's harder for citizens to get money to the U.S. WOSU's Esther Honig reports on one student from Kent State University who's doing all he can to complete his degree before he's forced to drop out.
This is your apartment?
Yeah.
Oops, this one.
Sorry.
Minutes from the Kent State University campus, Ibrahim El-Bedri lives in a small apartment he shares with a roommate and his cat, an orange tabby named Zina.
And so what happens to her if you have to leave?
We didn't think of that, didn't we? No, not yet.
Sitting on the couch, El-Bedri folds open his laptop and checks his fundraising campaign. He says it's an idea he got from school administrators.
They were like, why don't you set up a GoFundMe account? And it might help you out.
He got a few donations the first day it went live, but it's been about a month and he's still many thousands away from his goal of $50,000. This may be his last option.
My plan? I'm not sure what's my plan. Like,
El-Bedri has the money to pay his college tuition. He just can't get to it. He came to the U.S. in 2014 to study computer engineering. At the time, the conflict in Libya wasn't so bad. But as he finished his sophomore year, the fighting resumed and the country started to limit the amount of currency leaving its borders.
Until now, it doesn't look like the money's going to get from Libya because it's just getting worse and worse and worse.
Kent State says both their Iraqi and Libyan students are struggling with this. They've managed to put some in touch with emergency loans or allowed them to enroll on good faith, hoping the money will arrive eventually. But there's only so much the school can do. El-Bedri owes the university tuition for two semesters. In March, he was forced to drop his classes, and if he can't pay tuition by August, he won't be allowed to enroll and he'll lose his visa.
So if I was a Libyan student who had the right to be here, I'd try to make it work too.
That's Jonathan Weiner. He's a former special envoy for Libya and is now a fellow with the Middle East Institute in D.C. He says if El-Bedri loses his student visa, there's a good chance he won't be able to get another one. There's no longer a U.S. embassy there, and the Trump administration has complicated travel from Muslim-majority countries, including Libya.
Well, Libya has been unable to form an effective government for several years now.
Arab Spring protests in 2011 led to the ousting of former leader Muammar Gaddafi and a civil war. Now basic services like health care, education, and electricity are unstable. Weiner says the collapse of the oil industry led to an economic crisis. The country is afraid of running out of hard currency. That's why El-Bedri can't get money from his own bank account.
If they run out of dollars because there's not enough money left, it's all been spent, the country goes to an immediate humanitarian catastrophe.
There are about 1,500 students from Libya in the U.S., and Weiner says their education is crucial to the country's future.
So I would like to see as many Libyan students as possible be able to complete educations here, get degrees, and then return back to Libya and contribute to their country.
But that may not be the case for El-Bedri, who is just a year from completing his degree. Back in Libya, he says students learn computer coding with a pen and paper. Studying in the U.S. was a privilege.
You know, when you run for a dream and you finally get to that dream, and you're halfway through it, you wake up from the dream. And that's basically what will happen.
Going home, says El-Bedri, will sting forever. Esther Honig, WOSU News.
And back here at home on Dayton Youth Radio this week, we have a story by Tiffany Pauly from Stivers School for the Arts about how her neighbor transformed into her hero.
I'm a mixed young woman. My mother, who is Caucasian, was unsure about my father. He's African American. My mother and father just had too many differences to sort through. So he stepped out of my life, and I'm in a single parent house. My story is about a man who moved next door to me. His name is David, but we call him Dave for short. I remember the very first time I met him. A 6-foot stocky man with short hair, stretched earlobes, covered in tattoos. His height to me is terrifying. His loyalty tattoo stuck out to me. Even now, I'm still fascinated by his tattoo. Who knew a man who owns a tattoo shop in Dayton would have ever taken an interest in me as his adopted daughter? June 8th, 2011, is the day I lost my grandmother. We walked into her home and peered into her room. She appeared as if she were sleeping. Raging in tears, buckled knees, I was broken. She was my rock, the person who held me when things got rough. She was my sunshine. My mom was trying to console me, but I just would not come to my senses to save my life. Dave was on his way somewhere when my mom called him. He came racing home. I was standing on our porch when he pulled me into his arms. I remember him saying, "There, there, baby girl, it's okay." I swear, being told this just made me cry even harder. His shirt was drenched from my tears. He never loosened his embrace. This was the day Dave and I grew extremely close. June 21st, 2011. It's a Tuesday morning. My mom and I are at Children's Medical Center. I'm being prepped for brain surgery. I was diagnosed with a concussion from falling on a concrete floor. The CAT scan revealed that I had a mass, and none of my doctors knew what it was. Therefore, I had to have a brain surgery. My mom told me after surgery, he was by my side the whole time. This is when he took on the role of being my father. As I grew older, we grew closer. Dave tells me he loves my courage I showed facing all the obstacles I had growing up. Dave loves when I smile. He says my smile gives his life purpose when he's down. I am a very shy and reserved person. So for me to open up to this person that I didn't really know was really big to me. I can't express my appreciation enough for him. If you're an adult who wants to step up to help raise a child who's not biologically yours, just do it. Don't be afraid to take on something new. The impact you have on that child's life is out of this world. And I feel there just needs to be more of these stories out on the air, because there's a lot of single-parent homes. For Dayton Youth Radio, at Stiver School for the Arts, this is Tiffany Pauly.
That's a story entitled Princess, written and produced by Tiffany Pauly from Stiver's School of the Arts. Special thanks to Eva Maxudis and Leslie Rogers. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
To hear more Dayton Youth Radio stories, visit our website, wiso.org, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Armott Boyer Charitable Trust, Fifth Third Bank trustee.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the first week of middle summer, the second week of the sweet corn moon, the week of Aphelion, and the first week of the second half of the year. I walked down toward the river in the morning. All around me, leaves were turning a deeper green from the advance of the season. Toward the water, white hobblebush hydrangeas in bloom brightened the undergrowth. cobwebs of Microsthena spiders lay across my way. I found a cluster of webworms on a buckeye tree. Two iridescent tiger beetles raced in front of me. I saw that some honeysuckles had orange berries. Solomon's plume had brown berries. Blackberries were green. Raspberry branches with sweet black fruit hid behind the touch-me-nots. Catchweed seeds were yellowing and they stuck to my shoes. I picked and sampled a bitter May apple. Near the wetlands, moss on a fallen tree glowed in the canopy twilight. Spent watercress lay upended in a shallow backwater. A few shining blue damselflies hovered near the aging skunk cabbage. I listened to cardinals, a thrush and a pileated woodpecker. All around me, robins clucked and peeped to guide their young. These things and more came into me, and for the duration of that walk, seemed to change my life in a cascade of alterations that left nothing the way it was at the beginning. Each act of awareness transforming the way I saw the world, and then those transformations compounding and coloring the awareness of observations to come, making the whole world new. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the second week of middle summer. In the meantime, walk in the woods, changing yourself.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back again next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.
Take a trip to the far reaches of space, time, and music every Sunday night on Alpharhythms. I'm Juliet Frumholdt. Come along with me, and I promise I'll get you home refreshed and ready for the work week ahead. That's Alpharhythms, Sunday nights, 8 to 11 on WYSO.
Well, I look at it myself as the beginning, really, of an exploration. That's the reason we're exploring. You don't know what you'll run into on an exploration.
Are you current? Are you with it? Are you at the front of the line of what is? The leading edge of now, holding the reins of what will be? Do you get it? Are you up for it? Down with it? In the news? On the beat? You can be. How, you ask? Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Do it now. Not that now. This now. You won't just be recent. You won't just be fresh. Not just up to the minute. You'll be current. You will be what's happening. It is never too late to get up to date. Become a sustaining member of WYSO. Get current. And keep it that way. At WYSO.org.
This week on American Roots, ladies sing the blues and beyond with the song, stories, and voice of jazz and torch singer Billie Holiday.
Sometimes I say if I just could get away with my man.
Guests include Cassandra Wilson and Lady Day biographers John Zwed and Bob O'Mealy. I'm Nick Spitzer with American Roots from PRX.
Coming up this afternoon at 3, right after the Deer Green Place, right here on WYSO.